You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Today, we're meeting the three candidates seeking to represent North Carolina's 7th Congressional District. Republican Congressman David Rauser has held the seat for two terms and is seeking his third. He faces challenges from a Constitution Party candidate, whom we met in the first segment, and Democratic nominee Dr. Kyle Horton, who beat out Grayson Parker in the primary. Dr. Kyle Horton is an internal medicine doctor with a business degree. She's worked in the emergency department at Duke University before medical school. She's also provided veteran-specific health care through the Department of Veterans Affairs. After her residency, she stayed to train medical residents at the VA, and she cared for veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom in a post-deployment clinic. She lives in Curie Beach, and she joins us now. Kyle Horton, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you for having me, Rachel.
And this is a pre-recorded interview, just a reminder for our listeners. One of the key issues, as you know, for people in the 7th Congressional District in North Carolina is clean drinking water. The public learned relatively recently that multiple chemical compounds that are currently unregulated and probably dangerous to human health are in the drinking water supply. The EPA has yet to issue some of these regulatory guidelines for these chemical compounds. We hear it's coming. If you were elected to this seat, how would you handle the next several steps?
So what I think needs to happen, Rachel, is that, you know, as your congresswoman, is I need to bring my expertise as a physician and someone who's committed to public health to the table to inform our policy. And so we're concerned with Gen X, and then also many folks may not realize that the ugly cousin of Gen X is actually in firefighting foam around Seymour Johnson Air Force Base in particular. So this class of compounds that we believe may cause cancer, it may be associated with thyroid, like gland dysfunction, needs to be addressed. But as you mentioned, with the EPA, my opponent has been someone who's taken money from the likes of the DuPont Good Government Fund before. And I do realize DuPont and good government do not belong together. But there's been a tide of defunding and dismantling the EPA by extremists. And so what I think needs to happen is, one, we need to strengthen and fund the EPA appropriately. And then we need to look to innovation in public health. So the Center for Disease Control has what's called an Environmental Public Health Tracking Network. And what that does is it enables, like, county public health departments that already track cancer rates and things like that to provide that data directly to the CDC. And then we could look at trends to really figure out what we could expect, so doctors know how to test and address these emerging contaminants like Gen X. And we figure out what these safe threshold levels are, or how to protect our families.
There are studies underway, but we do hear from some folks that when the news broke that Gen X was in the water and had been dumped into the water, its predecessor also, I think, C8, for about 30 years.
Yes.
People looked for health anomalies and didn't find any in this region. What do you say to that?
Yeah, so I think there's some complacency there because we have seen some variation in rates of thyroid disease. There have been some variations and concerns about GI-related illnesses in particular. Brain cancers are something that people had looked at before, that there seemed to be some anomalous trends in this part of North Carolina. But again, this is where, with this Environmental Public Health Tracking Network, if you can really look regionally and say in the western part of the state where they don't have Gen X or C8 derivatives, that we see very significant differences in disease patterns, then we would really know for sure, because that can be correlated with animal models then. And really, once we know that it's confirmed in animal studies and then in humans, that's pretty definitive.
We hear that repealing the Affordable Care Act is a primary objective of the Republican Party. And one of the stated reasons is that people shouldn't be forced to buy health care that they either don't want or can't afford. And we heard anecdotally from people after Obamacare went into effect that some folks were weighing the financial difference between the penalty for not having health insurance and the actual cost of health insurance. Where do you think this needs to go?
Yeah, so I'm deeply concerned about this mantra of, you know, after 7 years of repeal and replace, what we learned is that the Republican leadership in Congress didn't really have a plan to replace. It was repeal and take away, you know, millions of Americans' health care and do away with protections for those with pre-existing conditions. Well, needless to say, as a doctor, I'm deeply committed to health care, and I believe that health care should be a right in this country and not just a privilege for the wealthiest few. But what has happened is that the biggest pharmaceutical companies and insurance companies and their lobbyists have wielded so much power that we're not moving our healthcare system forward in the way that it is. So more important than the mandate is, I think, trying to cover more Americans and to ensure that they can afford the coverage that they want. So what we are talking about with our campaign is steps towards getting towards, you know, expanded Medicare that would cover folks. And how we would get there is lower the Medicare eligibility age to age 50. Then we can negotiate drug prices across those millions of Americans. And we can figure out cost containment measures to get some price accountability and figure out how to draw more insurance companies in to enhance competition. And we could expand Medicaid federally, regionally in the South, where states wrongly chose to put partisan politics over people's lives and did not expand Medicaid, which is something that Congressman Rauser was opposed to Medicaid expansion in the state Senate. And if we federally expanded Medicaid and set up a regional marketplace and then start incrementally covering more folks with Medicare, they'd have more choices. We'd have more competition, more control on bringing down healthcare costs and reining in those big pharmaceutical and insurance companies.
So you're saying that federal expansion would then be funded by the federal government and would sort of bypass the state's rulings on that?
Absolutely. So where, you know, states like North Carolina, as you know, with Medicaid expansion, we were supposed to get our federal taxpayer dollars back here in North Carolina to cover more North Carolinians, but people chose out of spite to play partisan politics and not expand Medicaid. And that has devastating effects as we're dealing with the opiate crisis in particular. A lot of people don't realize that roughly a quarter of mental health care and a fifth of substance abuse care is covered by Medicaid. But my opponent has opposed Medicaid expansion and is now trying to push an extremist dialogue of work requirements. Well, people should realize that the vast majority of Medicaid recipients are working individuals. They're just working poor, and they're not being paid a living wage.
You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. We're talking with Dr. Kyle Horton, the Democratic challenger, seeking to represent North Carolina's 7th Congressional District. Incumbent Congressman David Rauser is seeking his third term. Constitution Party candidate David Fallon is challenging Rauser's seat as well. Today's interviews are pre-recorded. It's very easy, as the Republicans have learned, to trumpet the failings of the other side when you're not in a position to get your own agenda on the docket. What do you think the Republicans have done right in Washington?
So it's a tough one recently because I feel like things have gone way more extreme than what the Republican Party used to represent. And I do think there are some strengths in the way that Republicans have traditionally valued national security and making sure that they keep us safe. And I think that's critically important. But there's a line as well between keeping us safe and respecting our national security and standing in the world, and then, you know, warmongering or just funding defense contractors to the hilt and basically privatizing war. So while I think that they've done a good job of funding defense in the past, I feel like we've now gone to the other extreme. And I think this is why it's so important for leaders like me to run, who are practical, who've worked across the aisle, and who will not embrace this tide of extremism. But people should know that Congressman Rauser is ranked 404th out of 465 members in the House for unwillingness to work bipartisan and work across the aisle, that actually puts him as more extreme than Tea Party head Mark Meadows of the Freedom Caucus.
We actually heard from Republican Senator Jeff Flake of Arizona on 60 Minutes that there's no value in reaching across the aisle. He said there is no currency for that anymore. There's no incentive. So even if you were elected and you went to Washington and you were willing to do that, how are you going to change the tide? How are you going to change the dynamic of this in very serious polarization?
Yeah, I think the key is to make politics personal, and that's really what we're trying to do with our campaign. So I think what Senator Flake was getting to is that there's so much money in politics, there's so much cronyism and corruption that people feel like they have to pay their dues to the party that they're in instead of feeling accountable to their districts and the people. But I'm a different kind of leader. That's why we've done so many town halls to actually get out in the communities in the wake of Florence. We went into the hardest hit communities. I didn't just go to emergency management centers and talk to, you know, career politicians. I got into the communities. And so then what I will bring to the table and why I do think there's value in working across the aisle is that in the way that I work with Senator Tillis, who took Senator Burr's place on the Veterans Committee, these were really personal issues. We have a lot of veterans. Here we're sandwiched between Bragg and Lejeune. Seymour Johnson's in the district. They were willing to work with me on solutions, and Senator Tillis co-sponsored a bill with Senator Amy Klobuchar to help veterans exposed to burn pits because it was personal to the people that they represent. But I was able to paint that picture because I knew the stories of veterans and bothered to listen to them and get out in the communities and to meet people where they are.
Beach nourishment, shoreline stabilization, that's a serious concern for coastal stakeholders in the 7th District. And, of course, the incumbent, Congressman David Rauser, has done a good job of keeping federal funds flowing to this area. If you were elected, should constituents worry that this influence he has in Washington that gets federal funds for the beaches, would that go away?
No, it most definitely wouldn't. So I live in a beach community of Curry Beach, and I do give him kudos. He has done a good job of securing beach renourishment funds, and I believe we should continue exactly in the way he has of doing matching funds local to state. It's been working. I would, you know, be able to accomplish the same things that he has. But what I want people to know is that it's easier to plan long-term for beach renourishment when you acknowledge things like the threat of climate change. My opponent has denied the scientific reality of climate change. And actually, when he was in the state Senate, he introduced a bill banning consideration of accelerated sea level rise. That bill actually made us a national laughingstock. Stephen Colbert called it E equals MC scared. And so if we acknowledge the scientific reality of climate change and how that might threaten our beach communities over the long term, we're going to be able to find much more effective long-term funding strategies and solutions. So they should know I'll be practical and solution-minded.
One of the concerns for people who aren't considering sea level rise when they look at development along the coast is that all of this currently buildable land will suddenly become unbuildable. That is a serious loss of revenue. How do you address that? I mean, it's very easy to say climate change is happening. We need to plan for it and become more resilient and take some of these beachfront areas off the table. But then who loses?
Yeah, so that's really short-term thinking, though, Rachel, and that's my concern is that, you know, it's short-term revenue that they're looking at that we wouldn't be able to develop those properties in the short run. But what we know is with Florence in the wake of Matthew, that we had two horrendous hurricanes that are essentially they're becoming superstorms being fueled by global warming. So then it is costing us billions, and now it's going to probably be trillions after all of these hurricanes to recover in these areas that no one should have built in the first place because they're far too vulnerable. And so I'm thinking long term instead of just short term revenue gains. And people should know that this is a matter of public health. It's a matter of fiscal responsibility to ensure that properties that we build can survive over the long term and withstand storms.
One of the byproducts of Hurricane Florence was the breaching of Duke Energy coal ash into the Cape Fear River, also of some Hog Lagoon waste. And people who are supporters of hog farmers, which that's a lot of people in the state, it's a key component of North Carolina's agricultural economy, say a tiny percentage of hog lagoons breached, a tiny percentage, most didn't. Where do you stand on that? And considering these superstorms, does anything need to change?
It does need to change, but they're right. It was a small percentage overall, and pork is a critical industry in the state, and I am adamantly pro-farmer, but it's important to note that our agriculture policy at the federal level has become about multinational corporations, in many cases being run out of China and in other countries that don't respect our environmental policies and our health and well-being here. And so while my family, my great-grandparents had a small tobacco farm in eastern Kentucky, I respect the role agriculture is because it's a part of who we are in eastern North Carolina. I will fight for farmers every day on the Hill, but all of the risk has been put on our small and family farmers. And so what needs to change is we protect small and family farmers.
And that's our time. You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. Dr. Kyle Horton, thanks for sharing your views with us.
Thank you so much, Rachel.
When we come back from this break, we'll meet Republican incumbent David Rouser. Stay with us. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.